welcome to the next episode of Microsoft Dev Radio. It's an exciting episode today where we're going to be talking about some of the things developers get to think about and figure out when they're building a Windows Store app, even a line of business app inside Windows 8, some of the problems of data and size of forms and different things like that. I'm excited to be here with Tyler Gibson. He's a UX designer on the Visual Studio team. We're going to go through some of these problems together. Tyler, thanks for being on the show.
Hi there. Glad to be here. Thanks for having me, Jerry.
Tyler, let's start with you. Tell us exactly who you are.
Okay. I'm a UX designer working in the developer division, working on Visual Studio and Team Foundation Server. I've been here for about 5 years, actually 5 years today, to the day. That I've been at Microsoft, and
today is your five-year anniversary?
Today is my five-year anniversary.
Tyler, this is my one-year anniversary.
Hot dog.
That is crazy, on the 17th? Seriously.
Isn't that nuts?
My gosh. Yeah, that is crazy. I knew I liked you.
Got a connection.
Yeah. Now, Tyler, before we go much further, what is that behind you?
So that is a fort that the rest of my UX team built for me. Because I just got married recently, and so they built me a giant cedar doghouse, which currently occupies most of my office.
Very nice. Okay, let's get to what we're talking about. The design guidelines. Summarize what we're going to hit here, Tyler, the problems that developers are hitting. How would you characterize them?
So I think I would characterize the problems that I'm seeing already in Windows 8 Store apps, and really these are fairly classic data problems in terms of, you know, how do I display large sets of data to a user in a way that isn't just noise, in a way that's performant both from the user's perception as well as from the system itself. Like, how do I not run out of memory? How do I not use up my entire network connection? And then once you get that data, what do you do with it? Like, how do I make sense of it? How do I take action on it? How do I manipulate it? It's fairly classic problems, but in the Windows 8 store apps and with some of the new modern UI patterns and tiles and touch UI, like, a lot of this stuff gets compounded. It gets worse, and people don't necessarily know, okay, how do I take a old school forms over data line of business app and really make it modern? What does that even mean?
Yeah, and it's a big problem for developers, especially looking at line of business apps where they've got lots of forms, lots of fields, lots of pages, lots of data. In fact, when I go to Visual Studio and I say new project and I select the grid project, it shows an awesome grid layout and how to interact with it. But that doesn't necessarily answer the question. It does show how do you show your data. It doesn't answer the question how do you show your data if you have 150,000 records, right? Things right. like that. Those are the sorts of problems. And where do developers turn for that sort of UI guidance? It's sort of what we're going to talk about today. There are other problems, too. We're going to talk about this. It's not, if I was a SQL developer or a SQL database admin and I said big data, there's a lot of meaning to big data. Yeah. That's not what we mean now. Big data in an app is just bunches of data, record after record after record after record.
Yep. Yeah, it's really about, you know, maybe there is big data behind the scenes, but this is how do you take whatever size and scale of data you have, how do you fit it onto a screen that is meaningful and useful to the user?
Yeah. And we recognize there are more problems that developers get to, like, wrestle with than this, right? The long lists of data is one. Large number of properties, you know, if they have a lot to fill out, how to show errors when there's multiple pages that they're editing, how to do data entry inside an app that's designed for touch, you know, what if their menus are more extensive and really start filling up inside the app bar. I mean, on and on there are these things, like if the navigation is deep, how to handle advanced searches, whether or not to put commands on the left or right. I mean, it goes on and on. It really is a set of guidelines to help train a developer and a designer's brain how to solve these problems. We're just going to walk them through solving one today, big data. All right, so let's start with explain the problem as it's existed for a long time. Like, go through the problem.
So as I'm showing in the slide here, my favorite model for explaining this is called the human action cycle. And it's not a new model. It comes from Donald Norman. But the key part of this is interacting with any computer comes down to two cycles, basically. You have the cycle of perception and the cycle of evaluation. And within that, you've got three steps on each side. So when you first look at a screen that's got data on it, you're instantly perceiving the screen. So it's kind of unconscious glance. You haven't thought about it. Then the next thing you naturally do as a person, you try to interpret that data. So what am I looking at? Is it a set of things? Is it a list of things? Are they the same? Are they different? Let me make sense of what I'm looking at. And then you evaluate that thing I'm looking at. Like, is it the thing that I thought I was going to see? Is it different? Is it bigger? Is it smaller? Is it in the form that I expected it to be in? And then the loop back is, okay, once I've mentally evaluated that, what am I going to do with it? What do I want to do with the thing I'm looking at, the object or the list of objects? Coming up with, okay, now that I know what I want to do, how am I going to do it? And then doing it. And
sure.
The interesting
looking at those
thing,
two charts, Tyler, I mean, I have seen that one on the left. What a nightmare, right? I mean, I look at it, I got to focus, and I still don't get out of it what it's really telling me. It's the same data on the right, just presented differently?
That's right. So the concept here is really about, this is really about the gulf of perception of, even though it's the same data, the same type of chart, the same data points, the same labels, by reducing the chrome, if you will, not making it 3D, flattening it out, reducing the line work, you actually shorten that perception and interpretation process so that you can evaluate what are you looking at faster. And then you can switch to that mode of evaluation, of taking action on the thing I'm looking at, that much more quickly. And again, in that taking my intention and what my plan of action is going to be to execute, because there's fewer things there and it's more clearly tied together, it actually reduces that set of, you know, what are the actions I can do? That's reduced, and executing on that is actually more likely to succeed. So maybe I'm clicking on our product, for instance, in the instance of this chart.
Perfect.
Yep.
I get it. Now, I guess one of the takeaways a developer would say, or for a developer here, is how do you show more data? How do you show all of this data? And maybe the first consideration is, do you really need to show all the data that you're planning to show? Often I've seen line of business applications with a massive grid and a column for every property, and nobody would ever look at every property, right?
That's right. And I think that's it's really important to note that this cycle, this human action cycle, happens on many different timescales. So the notion of looking at a particular item and deciding to click on it, that's a full action cycle that may only take half a second. Where in your example, I look at a giant data grid of properties, my action cycle to actually figure out that I even want to scroll down or that I want to sort that thing, it may take me 10 seconds, it may take me 20 seconds, it may take me several minutes, depending on how complex the UI is that you're being shown. You're absolutely right in that it's not always better to show to pack as much in as you can. Now, you know, that it comes down to information density, and information density can be a good thing. It can be a bad thing. It's a total blessing and a curse mentality. And it really depends on why you're looking at something and what you're trying to do with it and what the objects themselves are. As to how dense you want to pack things and how you pack them.
So less is more. I think we all know the adage, but we're not naive. There are times when more data is just a necessary thing to put into your app.
That's right. And that really comes into the next piece, which is shortening this cycle. So you've got these six steps in the cycle. Shortening any one of the steps will improve your overall experience. You don't have to improve everything all the time. If you can improve one aspect of it, you're better than you were before. And really that it starts with the notion of fast and fluid, which is really one of the core underpinnings of the Microsoft Modern UI movement, is making the UI both technologically faster and more fluid in terms of animation and loading, as well as being perceptually faster and more fluid. So if you notice, like I break this down, the way I think about it is in terms of latency, bandwidth, and memory. And, you know, those are very techie terms, but you can think of latency in terms of human latency. Like when the screen loads, how do things appear on the screen? Like, does everything pop up instantly? Do things lazy load? Is it a blank screen and then something magically appears after a few seconds? So that's the human perception of latency. But then that is caused by this combination of network, disk access, rendering and processing behind the scenes. And you can go through the same thing for bandwidth and for memory. Like my memory, my short-term and long-term memory are very different from the memory that the computer has. And there are cases when my memory actually is better than the computer's in terms of what it can hold in conceptually. And there are many, many cases where the computer's memory is a whole lot better than mine. And so making sure you understand where those disconnects occur will let you design to avoid those disconnects, avoid those breaks, and really make things fit together and be more fluid.
So give me some practical applications here. Yeah. I want to reduce latency in my application. What are those initial steps, right? What are we going through? Go ahead.
So the nice thing for devs, and I've been really excited about this, is that WinRT actually bakes in some of the nice stuff here. So data virtualization is really the key to increasing fluidity and making your app feel faster. And one of the great things about WinRT is when you do data binding, by default, you get virtualized data binding. And what that means is if you create, for instance, you use that grid, that tile grid out of the box, that control, when you data bind that to a source, if your data source has 400,000 items in it, by default, that control in WinRT is only going to load the first 120, 200. And it actually automatically scales to the UI you're presenting. So if you're on a big monitor and that grid can show 200 items, it's going to preload like 400. If you're on a smaller, like a 10-inch Microsoft Surface device, for instance, maybe it can only load 30 items at a time. So it's going to preload 120. That combined with the asynchronous capabilities that are, again, baked into a lot of WinRT so that when you do load items over the network, you're not sitting and waiting for, you know, 5 minutes for this giant data set to come in. We can actually lazy load items as the network allows us to. And again, with those baked in controls that we have coming out of the box with Win8, that async loading lets me say, well, I'll draw the tile, even though I can't fill it, at least you know there's going to be something there as it loads.
So this idea of lazy loading then is where the grid, it actually does populate all of the records that you want and that you can see, and maybe like half a scroll away. And then as you approach, based on a trigger that the developer selects, it's going to load the next page or the next two pages or whatever it is you tell it to do. So they can keep scrolling. So in your example, 400,000, they could just scroll. Think of how much fun that'd be. 400,000 scrolls. That'd be wham, wham, wham. That'd be nice.
It's flying. So the use of predictive loading, we've got some stuff baked in. That said, and this is where it gets to what's there today that you can really use to jumpstart and what's not quite there, but from a pattern perspective, like there's ways to implement this and there's ways to do it in a consistent way. So that notion of predictive loading. So as I scroll over, you know, it loads the next set and the next set.
Sure.
The key thing there is that trigger to load my next blob of data, my next set of tiles or my next set of objects in my list, it shouldn't happen when I get to the end of what's loaded. It should happen as I'm moving so that as a user, I should never see that view is virtualized, that I'm not actually, I don't have all the items sitting in front of me and I'm just moving around. You really want as an experience, you don't want to expose the technology to your user. You don't want the user to ever know that your view is virtualized. You want the user to say, I've got all this data at my fingertips whenever I need it, as I need it. And then the next piece there which this bothers the heck out of me. And this is not unique to Win8. This is very common in modern web apps, you know, your Web 2.0 apps and things like that, is when you do data virtualization, a lot of times different controls, and AJAX is notorious for this on the web, they don't load the set size. They load completely on demand. So what happens is I scroll my scroll bar over, or I'm swiping over to the edge of the screen, and the UI tells me I've hit the end of my set.
Yeah.
And then the next set of things loads in, and now the scroll bar jumps, or the UI jumps, and it's a really jarring process that's really exposing that the technology behind the scenes.
Yeah. I see this on Facebook, same thing, right? You get to the bottom of your feed, and then you're like waiting while it spins. What's the right way to do it?
So the clever way to do this, and you can't always do it, but the clever way to do this is, if you know how big a result is, if you know how many total objects there are, what you can do is preset your scale. So you don't dummy load. So it's not like you're preloading all these elements, because you may run out of memory doing that.
That's right. But just because it's dummy doesn't mean it doesn't take up memory and performance.
That's right. But what you can do is set the extent of your view. You can do some simple calculation. You know, if a tile is 30 pixels wide and has 10 pixels of border on either side of it, you do 40 pixels times number of records, and now you give the user an accurate representation of the total kind of scrollable area, like how big is my data view, so that as they're moving, now you can load on demand as you need to. I think the other key point is this kind of run ahead. So the example you gave, I've got 400,000 objects. And if I start swiping like a madman, inevitably I'm going to run ahead of my loading. Like I'm going to hit a point where I need data and it's not loaded. And again, this is I think a reflection of just kind of, we're just getting started with modern apps here. Most of your asynchronous loading stuff that's built in, and the simple algorithms to do this, they load from the beginning. So if I do a quick swipe and I'm 100,000 items in, I have to wait because my application is loading the first 99,000, even though I really don't care about that. Now, the pattern to get over that is to truly do virtualized load and asynchronous loading. So you load based on my current viewport. So give me 100 items before where I am and 100 items after where I am. And if I go really quick, don't load the middle. Here's my new stopping point, my new UI viewport, and do that same thing again, load before, load after. And it's certainly possible to do from a pattern standpoint, and those kinds of things really, really affect the user experience when you talk about big data sets, when you get into those thousands or tens of thousands of items, because, you know, as I'll show a little later, like SkyDrive is a not so great example of this, in that if I've got a huge data set of pictures, for instance, and I scroll to the end, I'm sitting there, you know, waiting for those first, you know, 400 to come over the pipe before I get to the last set.
Okay, give me a visual. Let me see here. I think I've got the idea, right? I've got a gigantic grid, and I want to be able to fly through it as well as drag the drag the scroll bar right into the middle, right, and be able to see that record, those records right in the middle. Let's say it's alphabetical. I drag all the way to the Z's. I don't want to wait A through Z to load before I see Z. That's what we're talking about. Give me some visuals.
So here's a visual, just a screen cap I took of SkyDrive, and we can show this in action in a little bit here. I'm going to go through some demos of some kind of live Windows 8 apps, but in this case, I opened a photo folder on SkyDrive, and you can see as it starts to lazy load from the left to the right, which is great. Like, you're blocking in my UI for me. I get a sense of how many objects there are. But when I go scroll to the right there, I just get a sea of gray.
Yeah.
And I have no idea where the loading is versus where I want it to be. And it's really taking that power away from the user. Like, when I scroll over, I'm implicitly telling that application that this is the set of data within the larger set that I really care about seeing the details or the information for. And there's actually a simpler way around this problem. If I go back to my kind of overview slide here, which is there's an old school notion that we used to call them occasionally connected apps or occasionally connected architectures. And there's a big push with Windows 8 and really with modern apps to be always connected. And it's a great thing to be always connected. But you run into these experience issues when you're relying on the pipe to continually bring your information to you. And one of the things that you can do is actually implement an occasionally connected architecture and not make use of it for being offline or being disconnected from the internet or, you know, being over a 56K modem connection or something, which is really why they used to be there. And yeah. Really today you do this, use the same architecture as a way to truly virtualize the entire experience. So you can do things like when I load SkyDrive, if I'm using an occasionally connected architecture, I could be syncing in the background, downloading all of the, not all the files, but all the metadata about those files and really storing the whole thing in a local cache that acts just like my connected pipe so that when I open that pictures folder, I get all the thumbnails in at the speed that my disk and my local renderer can render them, which is nearly instantaneous. And the other thing that's great about this for large data apps and thinking about it in terms of occasionally connected pattern is it really makes network operations asynchronous from the user perspective. So I can do something and you can, and it happens locally, and you can totally abstract all that asynchronous network operation from the user. Like, I don't have to wait for my refresh to go do a server round trip. Do this refresh locally, then go to the server and handle that stuff. And if data's changed on the server, then you can bring it back to me when you can. But it's not impeding me. It's not affecting my experience that way.
I'll tell you a common technical thing I see developers do that they don't have to is if they load a list of, let's say it's even 100 records. Sometimes that can really bog them down because even though they're just going to show the name, let's say, right, name and maybe date, they will instead query the entire model. And so it will take a long time to get 100 full records rather than 100 partial records that'll show like that. And then as they select individual ones, they can go and query and fill in all the details.
And one of the awesome things about not only WinRT, but C# as a language, if you're doing C# and XAML in your WinRT app, is you can use Lambda expressions as a way to scope that in an easily implementable and maintainable way. You know, we talked about that notion of when I scroll to a particular viewport, stop loading the thing I was loading before, and now just give me the records around me. Yeah. I can do that with a Lambda expression. I can actually say, you know, select from the database where the records are within this range to this range, and only give me the elements of data that I need within these records so that I can deliver that experience as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
So it's absolutely
back to what we were talking. If you do have 400,000 records to show, a single data grid may actually not be the right solution.
That's right. And that actually leads me to my next point here. Man, you're great at this. I'll tell you what.
Thanks.
Tell
my wife.
That actually leads into this notion of human data scale. So as a UX designer, and I ask this question of myself, of other designers, of managers, and of developers, usually at least once a day, we talk a lot about, from a development standpoint, about supporting in scale. Like, can your UI support a million records? Like, it won't crash if you load a million objects into it, or you won't run out of memory.
Right.
But
right.
The really important thing is this human data scale. Like, what can a human understand and what can they comprehend and put in context and compute? And I bucket these into four buckets. And there's a lot of different ways to slice and dice this, but this has worked for me for a long time. So the first bucket is the 7 objects or less. Now, there's a lot of research that says human short-term memory, we can process 7 things in short-term memory.
Like a phone number, right?
That's right. If you're in the U.S., you get 7-digit phone numbers.
Yeah, it's easy. Right. Everybody else, it's a bummer.
That's right. They're in trouble. But if you have 7 objects or less, tile grids work really well because using things like images and rich media to represent a tile, when you have a small data set, allows a user at a glance to distinguish and differentiate, like, what have I got? And to make a decision on which object that I want to select. When you go over above 7 objects, there's actually a huge range bump. Between 7 objects to about 100, 120, 150, but up to that range, the set is actually too big. Like 8 and 100 are pretty close to the same thing in terms of human cognition. It's too big of a set for me to do a glance, kind of compare and interpret and select. Like that human action cycle increases an order of time when I go above that 7 object scale. And so at this point, you really want more than one thing to distinguish your objects. So 1 to 7, maybe all you have is a name. 7 to 100, I need a name and something else. Maybe it's a thumbnail, maybe right. It's an author's name, maybe it's a date created, and
some dimension that allows you to slice this data and bring it back
that's
to
right.
7.
Exactly. And this is still at that 7 to 100, it's okay for that slicing to happen at the mental level. Like, you don't have to have UI to filter you down back to 7.
Right.
You can go up to about 100, and if it's sorted explicitly, so that 1 to 7 sorted implicitly, 1 to 100, you say, you know, I'm showing you this based on A to Z, or
right.
I'm showing you this based on newest created. If you do that, you give me a couple of elements to decide on. I can scope in my brain down to the set of things that I care about or that I'm looking for. When you go that next step up, so 100 to 1,000, I can't do filtering in my brain anymore. Like, it's just too big. I can't scope it down. I can't fit enough objects within my view to really make sense of things. And that's when filters really become handy from an application standpoint. So that I can jump that one range up. I can get
yep.
to that 7 to 100 or that 7 to 12 things I really care about. And the other...
As soon as you hit 1,000 records, you need a way to bring it back to 100.
That's right.
You need a way to show it as 100, I need some way to mentally filter it back to 7 anyway. We're always
right.
bringing it back to what we can do in our mind.
That's right. It's always getting it down to a set of things that I and my brain can actually comprehend in short-term memory.
So now we have filters. Now we have a way of seeing the data. But then we have this scenario that comes up where we have literally thousands and thousands
That's
and
right.
thousands of records. What do we do?
So that is the 1,000-plus scenario. And the cool thing about this from a developer standpoint is anything over 1,000 basically has the same problem. 100,000 versus 1,000,000 doesn't matter from a user perspective. They're still too big.
Right.
And the easy way.
It's like searching the web, right?
That's
you
right.
may get 3 million records back. Who goes and clicks page 452,000? Nobody.
Exactly. So the pattern way that you can break that down, the easy way, is to introduce hierarchy to your UI. And hierarchy can mean like your mail client, where you
I'll have folders,
the screenshot here, where I have folders to a list to a reading view.
Mm-hmm.
Hierarchy can mean a tree view where I'm grouping objects so I can select and expand those.
Right.
Hierarchy can be more of a cascading list view. So I look at one block of objects and then I select one and I drill down and into that hierarchy. Hierarchy can be categorizations. So
if I'm in that above 7, below 100, really a semantic zoom is excellent, right? It's that single
right.
dimension that I can kind of slice it in my mind.
That's
if we're
right.
in that over 1,000 category, a semantic zoom doesn't even get us started.
That's right. Exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, an example of that, like, this is kind of filter versus hierarchy. So filter in your contacts list may be selecting, you know, your A, B, C, D to filter
yeah.
down to a noticeable list. But if I'm looking at my entire company, ABCD doesn't cut it because A
That's
might
right.
still have 10,000 people in it. What I really want to do is have a hierarchy to reduce. So maybe I select A, and then I select the next letter of their name and the yep. next letter of their name. And so I'm really, you know, when you think about it from a pattern perspective, autocomplete of text input is truly
hierarchical
navigation.
Right?
That's right.
Type to search kind of is a fake hierarchy of going through the letters.
It is a character-based hierarchy.
There it is.
When you
right.
think of it from a pattern perspective. So
and a lot of developers, I mean, they have a lot at their disposal to do, right? They'll build in this hierarchy that you can navigate through. They'll build in semantic zoom that they can also use to slice it up. They might even have type to search. They might have charm search as well. Advanced search sometimes can help them do it as well. There's a lot of different approaches. What's the wrong approach?
So the truth of the matter is the only wrong approach is the one that roadblocks your user. The wrong approach is the one that doesn't allow your user to actually get to an endpoint. So the classic example of this is when I'm trying to make a phone call and I bring up my contact list mm-hmm. and I go to a contact that doesn't have a phone number. All they have is an email address. Like, that's bad. Like,
yeah.
you have given me UI, you've given me a workflow that leads me to a literal dead end.
Yeah.
As long as you avoid that scenario where you don't want to allow the user to fail whenever possible, as long as you avoid that, it really is a matter of how do I make it better, not how do I make it right.
Right. Okay, so I want you to show me some demos, but I just want to make sure I've got it. I'm a developer. Once you're in this new scenario of over 1,000 records, let's say, or really that 700 range is still pretty serious. You've got to think about it. You have a lot at your disposal. You have semantic zoom, hierarchy, search, all these things that you can employ, each one making it easier, hopefully, for the user. Each one taking us a step, hopefully, away from how we've done it in the past with large, massive grids that we scroll forever. Another reason we do it is for app performance, so we can scale properly, not just usability. And I think the biggest takeaway I'm hearing from you is the developer kind of has carte blanche to do what's right? The UI, the UX guidelines that we have right now for developers are really ways of getting them to think about things, not necessarily everything should be semantic zoom now, right, or whatever, right? There are ways, and every scenario is different, and the developer knows their app, the designer knows their app, and they kind of go from there using this in their toolbox. I kind of want to see some apps that do it right, Tyler. Well, I can think of a lot of apps that do it wrong. Most of them I think I've been involved in. What are some apps that you think do it right?
So I'm going to pause, and let's get to demos.
Got it. Sure.